Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2014. Lecture 12, delivered on February 25, 2014. The title of this lecture is Annuities and Perpetuities.
Today, annuities and perpetuities. Let me refamiliarize you for just a moment here with those two little formulas from last time that were the what we call lump sum formulas. In other words, this finds the present value of a future lump sum of money or the future value of a present lump sum of money. Now, the future value is the present value of the money times 1 plus the periodic interest rate to the number of periods. And I don't know what I used last time for my thing. So this is the periodic interest rate. Now remember that you'll have to make sure that you are using not the annual. If there's compounding, you use the periodic. And this is the number of periods. So the FV equals PV times the quantity 1 plus K to the D power. Number of periods is D, and the K is the periodic interest. Alternately, the present value is the future value times 1 plus K to the negative D power, or 1 over 1 plus K to the positive D power. As I said, you can do it either with the negative exponent or in the denominator. Probably it'll work a little better for you if you use the negative exponent to pull this off, one way or the other. And I also showed you the effective interest rate. And obviously, that's something that's an easy pick-off question for a first exam. Give you a present value, future value problem, and then mention, oh, by the way, what is the effective interest rate? Straight up, not hard at all to get that one. However, this present value and future value formula, we use them all the time. But more likely in business, and you're going to need your calculator definitely for this class today, because if you want to do it by a formula, you're going to find that the formula is big and it's easy to make a mistake with it. There's also a real old school way to do it using tables that I don't know if anyone still does it that way. That was how we did it long, long ago before calculators, but okay. Now, the thing of it is, though, that generally speaking, in business, our question, or even in personal life, our question is not about a lump sum of money. It is about some kind of a cash flow that happens over a period of time. An amount of money comes to us. That is called an annuity. If there is a periodic cash flow, an annuity. Now, if that goes on forever, it's called a perpetuity. Interestingly enough, the formula for a perpetuity is a lot easier than the formula for an annuity. Now, a little bit of terminology here to keep this going. If I say regular, and for the most part, these will be regular, that means that it happens at periods that are in the same. Regular annuity would be like, you know, every 6 months, every 12 months, something like that, a regular annuity, every month. Now, unless I say differently, there'll be regular annuities in this class. The only thing you get by doing irregular annuities is just a complication. It doesn't really change anything, but it makes it a lot more like work. And it's not even really that realistic. Okay, more important, though, is level versus unlevel. A level annuity is one where the cash flow components are all the same. A level annuity is one where the cash flow components are all the same. Let me show you something here. Interestingly, bear with me. If I drew a timeline, here's period zero right now, and then one, two, three, four, five, etc. Suppose it was $200 was going to happen every period, let's say every year, 200. 200, 200, 200. That is a level annuity. Our formulas are the formulas you're going to have. The calculator works like a boss for level annuities. It loves them. You can do one of these in like, once you get down, get the hang of it, it takes about 5 to 7 seconds to do one of these. If you did it by formula, it'd take you a little longer, and you might get it wrong like I always did. But, okay, that's a level annuity. Sometimes you have an unlevel annuity, but a lot of times, here's what would happen. Suppose we have an unlevel annuity. One, two, three, four, five. We have a 200, 200, then 300, then 300, then 300. That's clearly an unlevel annuity. What sometimes we'll do, now if I wanted to find a present value of this, one thing I could do with either of these, just take the present value of each lump sum and pull it back the appropriate number of periods to the present and add them all up. You can always do that if you're desperate. But with the level annuity, I can use the level annuity formula and do it faster. With an unlevel annuity, well, yeah, you can always just take the present value of each one, pull it back. But there's a trick sometimes, if you look carefully, there's actually, in this one, there's a level annuity. There are two level annuities hidden. In the one that's 200, 200, 300, 300, 300, there's actually a $200 five-year, a $200 five-year level annuity, and there's a $100 three-year annuity, level annuity, hiding out there in years 3 through 5. I'm not always sure if it takes less time to do it this way, but you could actually use the formula to do a five-year $200 level annuity. There's a real fast formula. Do it on the calculator. And then what you could do is find a three-year level annuity that is actually, the formula would pull it back to here, and then take the present value of that lump sum back to here and add them up. If that seems a little complicated, yeah, it's a little complicated, but sometimes with these unlevel annuities, it's actually faster to do it that way. Again, this unlevel annuity is actually two level annuities. One of them is a $200. You do the formula for that, it'll pull it right back here to the present, right here. Then you do this $100 level annuity. It always pulls it back one period. You're always finding the present value one period back from where it starts. And then once you find that one on your calculator, then take it back, that result right there back as a lump sum, and add it to that one, and you've got the whole thing. Like I said, sometimes it gets just too complicated to do it that way. It's just kind of stupid. Other times it's worth your while to break it down into level annuities. It's up to you. And sometimes on a test I might give you one that's a little bit of an unlevel, and you can do it either way. It's your call. But anyway... One more thing that I need to bring up here. Oh, goody. One thing I want to bring up here. There's one other term. An ordinary annuity versus an annuity due. Ordinary annuity. Whether it's future value or present value, if I say ordinary, each cash flow component occurs at the end of the period. That's an ordinary annuity. Again, each cash flow component occurs at the end of the period. That's pretty much the way a lot of normal things work. Like if you get a car loan, your first payment isn't due until the end of that month. Or you get a home loan, your first payment isn't due until the end of the month. Ordinary annuities are quite common. However, once in a while, you run into an annuity where each cash flow component occurs at the beginning of the month. That's called an annuity due. An annuity due. And on your calculator, in this finance facility that you'll see, there's a little toggle at the bottom. Always make sure that you have that toggle set on the right one. It'll have end, begin. And sometimes you'll do it, probably you'll do it just right, and you'll get the wrong answer. And it's because you forgot that toggle at the bottom, which might be on the wrong setting. But, so, again, here's period zero, here's period one, here's period two, here's period three, here's period four. Okay, let's say these are years. The one on top where the first amount, $200, and this is a level annuity for 4 years, occurs at the end of the month. That is an ordinary, that's a level, regular, ordinary annuity. If, however, you got your first payment right away or made your first payment right away, it's still 4 years, but this is an annuity due because each cash flow component occurs at the beginning of the month. So when I find the present value of these two, let's do a discount the cash flows at 8%, just for now. Which one of these would have a bigger present value, the ordinary annuity or the annuity due? Which one would have a bigger present value when you do the calculation? Discounting the cash flows at 8% in both cases. Which one? The due would have a higher present value because your first payment occurs right now. In the ordinary annuity, the first payment doesn't occur until the end of the year. So all the cash flows are going to suffer one more period of discounting. So the ordinary annuity will be worth less as a present value than the annuity due. Now let's turn the problem around. This was a present value. Let's talk about a future value problem. Notice this one is more typical, more common, right? An ordinary annuity for present values. But now let's look at a future value problem. See what happens here. Okay. Period zero, period one, period two, period three, period four, zero, one, two, three, four. And let's do $200 on an ordinary annuity again. And on an annuity due. But this time we're looking at what the future value is at the end. In each case, when we do the future value, we're going to find the future value right here at the fourth year. This one is the ordinary annuity. This one is the annuity due. First things first. In future values, which one of those would be a more likely thing to happen? The ordinary annuity or the annuity due? If I were saving for your college education, turns out you're my son. Mother of God, what I was doing that night, I have no idea. Fortunately, I was wasted and I don't remember. But you're my son. So I want to make sure that you have 18 years of the same amount of money being put into your account so you can go to college so I never have to see you again. Okay, so I'm going to start putting in money so that on your 18th birthday, you can take it out and get the hell out of the house and take that nasty girlfriend with you. My God. Looks like your mother. She was ugly too. Okay, here. Which one is going to be more likely to be the one that you would be calculating on, the ordinary annuity or the annuity due?
Would it be the ordinary annuity?
I would probably say it'd be the annuity due, because with an ordinary annuity, looking at the future value, your last payment occurs, and then you want to know how much it is right after you put your last payment in. With an annuity due, the future value is telling you, if I put in $200 and then let the last payment ride, how much is it at the end? So if I put in $200 when you're born, I still had a few bucks left for some Jack Daniels to drown my sorrows with this disaster that's happening in my life. You were always a disappointment to me. And then the last one, on your 17th birthday, and then on your 18th birthday, I say, here's your check, now go. Okay, probably this one would be a little more likely. Now, question, which one would have a larger future value, the ordinary annuity or the annuity due? Talk to me. Look carefully at it. Remember, I'm putting money in the bank. Yeah, what would you say? The due. Because this one would have every cash flow component earning money for one more period than this one would. So interestingly enough, with both present values of annuities and future values of annuities, ordinary versus due, the dues always have higher value. A present value of an annuity due has a higher value than an ordinary annuity, and the future value of an annuity due has higher future value than the ordinary annuity. Kind of an interesting thing that it's symmetric. It's not what you would think. You might want to remember that, because sometimes I ask something about that on a test. Hint, hint. Suddenly writing. Okay. I used to ask this, what blindside people, and you have to think about it for a minute. And honestly, it didn't occur to me for a few years when I was doing finance, and I thought, it's always the annuity due that has a higher value, whether it's present or future value. Okay, now, back to the present, and then we'll go back to the future. Okay, we're going to find the present value of these two annuities, the annuity due and the regular annuity. So what I want you to do is turn on your calculator. I don't know if I mentioned this or not. If you turn on your calculator and you see this upper right-hand thing on your calculator. Let me see. If you see in the lower, in the upper right-hand corner, if you see the button no, then that means your calculator is upside down. Someone flipped over. Damn, he's right. Oh, I got mine upside down. There's a no. Okay. Now, I want you to hit apps, finance, or just type in one. Now, the one we use the most in this class is the TVM solver, time value of money solver. So you hit that one, or just hit enter. Now, the first thing you're going to want to do is just make sure that you key in the stupid numbers right. Also, don't do arithmetic. Let the calculator can do timeses and divides on its own. You don't have to do that. So what you want to do up there at the top is, for this problem, we've got a 4-year. So the number of periods is the same as the number of years here. So N is going to be 4. You key that in. Drop down to I percent. Yeah. TVM solver, just the top one. Just hit enter. So for N, it's going to be 4. The I percent, it's annual compounding. With annuities, it always follows the periods, unless there's something really weird about the thing. So it's 8%. Just type in 8. Do not put in 0.08. Now, the future value, that would be for a future value problem. You just blank that out like the PV is the one. Leave that alone. We're going to find the present value. The present value will always come out to be a negative number. If you have to key it in as a negative number. Don't ask me why. It's always been that way since the first of these stupid calculators were ever made, like 40 years ago. It's always been present values, you have to key in as negatives, and the answers come out as negatives. They always give some explanation that sounds logical, but it's just the way the chips are built. Okay, now, the PMT. Our payments are going to be $200, so you just key in $200. Now, the future value would be like a kicker that was sitting out there at the hind end of it. Put a 0 there. That P over Y and C over Y, just leave those as 1. Don't get fancy with that. There are people who say, oh, you make that the number of periods, so that'll be 12 or 20 or whatever. Leave it 1. And then go down to the PMT colon thing. We're going to do end so we can find the ordinary annuity first. Make sure it's on end. Now you go back up to the PV and you hit alpha solve. That's the enter button. Alpha solve. And what do you get for that? $662.43. And give me the dollar sign, for heaven's sakes. Dollar sign. Don't put a negative on it. That's just the calculator's weird thing. In other words, what this is saying is if this cash flow has a risk level of 8%, you would be willing to take $200 every year for 4 years, starting a year from today, or $662 right now. You would be indifferent between those two in this case. That's what that's telling you right here. Okay? Now let's find out what the annuity due would has, and all you have to do for this one is just go down and change it to begin at the PMT. Just toggle it over, go back up to PV, and say alpha solve. What do you get? Better believe it. It's just like you had concluded, and 42 cents, round properly. God, that bunches my boxers. 42 cents, yeah. Just as we had suspected, the annuity due, because the cash flow components are occurring, slid one forward, it's worth a little more to you. But in either case, obviously, it's not as much as, well, that's $800 there. No, it's not. There is really no $800 anywhere in there. Because there has to be that discounting of the value. That's how you find an annuity. Now, let's go for the future value ones. Okay, going up to the top, just make sure your numbers are in there right. You're going to have an N of 4. The I percent is 8. Now, PV, we zero that out because there's no kicker at the front end. Now, there is, in one problem you're going to see in this class, there's always a kicker. It's bond prices. There's always going to be a punch in there on a bond price, but that's later. But now the payment, and now we go to the FV, go down to N, change it back to N, go back up to FV, alpha solve, and what do you get? 90122. Now let's change that over to an annuity due and see what happens. I'm sorry, that was the ordinary annuity. This is the annuity due. Now let's begin. Go back up and do the FV, future value, alpha solve. Oh. Annuity due, again. You see it? It's worth more. Not much more, but we're talking about your college education. You got about $70 more to pay for your tuition, and you should be grateful. There you go. That's how you do these. And honestly, in this class, right here is where I show you the most practical thing in this whole class. Obviously, everything that I'm teaching you is going to benefit you hugely in your life, and you're going to be a much better person. But right here, in the next few minutes, is where we do some use these formulas for things that are of practical benefit to almost anyone. You need a car. You have decided that what you need is something that will speak to your sophistication, to your worldliness. Indeed, you want what is known in higher circles among the bros as a babe magnet. So you decide, I want a Prius. Which will ensure that you stay single your whole miserable life. So you decide, okay, I want one of these, and I found one for $22,000. Now I've got this place that'll give me a loan. It is a 5-year loan, monthly payments, obviously, APR. Is 6.95%. What are my monthly payments? And walk through me with it. All you do, here's the deal, go up to N. Your N is going to be the number of years times the number of payments per year. So what I would want to do is say this is a 5-year loan, so with 12 payments a year. So I just key in on the N line, 5 times 12. You don't have to hit enter or anything like that. Just 5 times 12, and then drop it down to the I percent. This is the one you have to remember, because it's a... What was that? 6.95%. You're going to key in 6.95 divided by 12, because the interest is calculated every month. So it's monthly. So you go 6.95 divided by 12. Don't do this by hand. You'll get rounding errors. Just let the calculator do it. Don't hit equals or enter or something like that. Just toggle down. The present value, that's what the price of the car is. That's what you're going to get up front right away, is that PV. So in this case, and don't forget to put in the negative sign. Don't put a minus, a negative. What was that, 22 grand? You're paying that much for this car? Jeez. Now go down to the FV and clear that out, because there's no kicker at the end, zero. And make sure that you have it toggled on end, because your payments are going to be at the end of every month, or at the end of the first period and then every one after that. They're not going to make you pay your first payment that day. It'll be a month from that day. Now just go back up to payment, PMT, and say alpha solve. What do you get? $435.11. Is that what you get? There's your payments. And what they're going to do is they're going to put that against your monthly income, and they're going to see, is that more than a certain percentage? And it'll be an up or down, a lot of it based on that, as well as your credit rating. So you can know right up front, like if you know that you don't want to go more than, let's say, 15% of your monthly income, you can actually say, how much of a car could I buy at that by putting in that price for the price value, PV. $435.11 is what you're going to pay on that vehicle. This is as practical as you can get because you can calculate your own interest payments on your car loans and figure out what your affordability is on them as well in this kind of a situation. Excuse me. Now, there's one other thing that might be worth doing here, because by law, every loan has to also include the effective yield on the loan. So if you want to back out, we can find out what this loan's effective yield is, because that's a required disclosure. So you go second quit, and for the effective yield, you would just do 1 plus 0.0695 over 12 to the 12th power. Remember the effective yield formula? That would be it for this monthly payment loan. So that would be 1 plus 0.0, the quantity, 1 plus 0.06, 695 divided by 12, and then close that all to the 12th power, and then minus 1. I'm sorry, I always forget to write the minus 1 on that. Minus 1. So your effective yield is 7.18%, rounded to 2 decimal places. Again, don't impress me by writing hundreds of decimal places. I will take a point off if you do that. 2 decimal places, rounded properly. One last thing about these formulas. If you do it wrong in that, you know, in that apps finance formula thing, you're going to get a wild number. It's almost like just do a quick reality check and see, well, does this number make sense? This happens last semester. I had on the test, I'll probably have you calculate either a home loan payment or a car payment. I'm not telling you anything that is obviously a secret. I had this one young woman, she got the problem wrong. She came to my office, well, how did I get it wrong? She got a payment for a car that was something like $8,000 a month. And I said, didn't that kind of tell you that $8,000, that was a rather large payment? She said, I don't know, my dad pays my car payments. And I thought, mother of God, just kill me now. Use some common sense. For God's sake, if you get a car payment for $8,000, that damn well better be a good car. Probably a German car. Anyway. This can be used in all kinds of ways. In financial planning, this formula straight up can be one of the ways that we start with looking at life goals. So, for example, we might have a situation where you, sir, want to retire at the age, you're about 20 now, 21, 20? Okay, you want to retire at the age of 60 with $5 million. At the age of 60 with $5 million, and the question would be, is that even feasible for that to happen? How much would you have to put out of every paycheck every month from now until you were 60 to have that happen? Is it even a realistic goal? Well, we don't know. We can actually ask ourselves. What we'll do is we'll say, okay, I'm going to sit down with you. We're going to do the calculation. We're going to figure out what would have to go into the bank every month, starting today, so that when you were 60 years old, you would have $5 million. So the one thing that would be obvious is that it would probably be, we'll simplify this, that would be 40 years monthly payments into an account, and we're going to look around and we find that there's a relatively safe investment that would guarantee you 6.4% APR. As long as you never screwed up, it would guarantee you that. And you just keep putting in the money every month for 40 years. What would that amount of money be if you start today and ride it for exactly 40 years? Go back, Apps Finance, TVM Solver. And let's go N. In this case, you would do 40 times 12. In other words, that would be 480 payments would go in. We could go down to the I percent. It's a 6.4% APR, so that would we would divide that into 12. So you just key in 6.4 divided by 12. Drop down. There's no PV in here. Put a zero. We're looking for a future value. Payment is what we need to do. Now for the future value. You want $5 million. So we're going to key in $5 million is the future value of it. I wish they put commas in this. It's kind of hard. Now, is this an annuity, an ordinary annuity, or is this an annuity due? It is actually an annuity due because I said we're going to put on our first payment now. So this is an annuity due. So you put in your last payment 1 month before you turn 60. So we're going to go begin. It really won't matter in this one much. Well, it will a little bit. Now go up to the payments, alpha solve. What do you get? It is actually, if you were making a really strong income, that would be doable on if you really were committed. And that's the problem we have in financial planning, is that discipline. Once we get people to do say, yeah, I want to do this, it's just to keep them doing it every month for years and years and years. But it's not completely infeasible to pull something like that off if you have a very robust income that doesn't waver back and forth. We do this for people all the time. One thing that, are you familiar with things like IRAs, Roth IRAs? A lot of times people put in a payment right before April 15th every year for a tax shield, a grand or $2,000. And then we can actually say, oh, well, how much is that going to accumulate to over a period of time? That it's something that we do all the time. Other ones we ask about, okay, you want to have a down payment for a house. What kind of down payment are you talking about? Well, okay, $20,000 down payment. That'll give you a lot more negotiating room for buying a house, getting a loan with a bank. So, okay, you plan to do this in 5 years. So let's start putting money in the bank right now, every month out of your paycheck, so that in 5 years you can go out house shopping with a $20,000 down payment in your pocket. You can do the same thing with other purchases, capital expenditures. Just plan ahead and then use the present, the future value formula to see what you're going to have to put aside every month to do the trick. You can do this with a lot of different things. Like I said, though, in financial planning, the big problem is not calculating what it is. It's getting people to stick to the plan and not waver. That is what annuities are all about. They're really not that hard, especially with the calculator. It's just making sure that you key in the numbers right and also that you don't forget that end versus begin button. There's another animal out there that is an annuity that never ends. It goes on forever. Now, that seems kind of unrealistic. Well, nothing lasts forever. Well, of course, love lasts forever. We know that. That's a lie. Lasts until you got enough money in the bank she can take when she moves in with her boy toy. Oh, anyway, where the hell am I? Bitterness. I need to keep it out of the classroom. Look, what would go on forever? Interestingly enough, there's something that is designed to go on forever. What the hell? Is someone going critical? Oh, okay. It's a corporation. Corporations theoretically never die. I mean, they are not like mortals. This idea that a corporation is a person and all that under the Constitution, it can't be because corporations don't have mortality. They die all the time, but that's just because they screw the pooch. By the nature of their existence, though, there's no reason why they should ever end, which means that if I were trying to find out the value of a corporation, one way I could do it is to say, well, suppose that I hold the stock of this corporation forever and it pays me my dividend over and over and over again. It'll pay it forever. That would be a forever annuity, which is what we call a perpetuity. The formula for perpetuity is actually very simple. And in fact, we have an example, an exact example of a kind of stock that is a perpetuity. It's called preferred stock. Preferred stock is equity, but it's kind of weird equity because on the certificate, it says how much you're going to get every year forever. That's what it said. It said it right there on the stock certificate. And it can't be broken away. The company is stuck with this forever. And it's the same dividend forever, as long as the company doesn't die. And this preferred stock, by the way, you see, we consider the fixed income investment, the classic one is a bond, because it pays a coupon every month for like 15 years, 20 years, 30 years. But in fact, preferred stock is a fixed income security too, and in some ways it's more attractive than bonds, because with bonds, when they retire, they pay off the face value and then you have to reinvest the money. With a preferred share of stock, it just goes on forever and ever and ever. You never have to roll it. You never have to do anything. You just collect your dividend check every year. Like I said, preferred stock is equity. It has prior claims to common stock. In other words, when dividends are dispersed, preferred stock has to be paid before a common stock dividend can be paid. If it is cumulative preferred and you don't pay the preferred dividend, you have to make it up, all of them that you haven't paid, before you can ever pay a common stock dividend. Interesting little trick. It's, you see, with common stock, if I raise money, I'm a company, I can raise money, sell common stock. It's fine to do that. And I don't have to pay a dividend. There's no law that says I have to pay a dividend. If I want to pay a dividend, I pay a dividend. If I don't want to pay a dividend, I don't have to. You're going to have the shareholders probably bitch at you if you don't pay your dividend and they were expecting one. But you don't have to pay a dividend. With preferred stock, you don't have to pay a dividend, but if it's cumulative preferred, you can't ever pay a dividend to the common shareholders until you catch up on the preferred dividends. It's kind of weird that way. Preferred stock has nice features for investors, although it doesn't pay much. Look, here's how preferred stock works. The preferred share, let's say XZN, cumulative preferred preferred, let's say 2.2% par value, $40 per share. hidden in there is how much your dividend is going to be. You buy this stock, one share of it, you will get every year forever 2.2% of $40. You'll get an 88 cent share per share dividend every year forever. If the company can't pay it to you, this is cumulative, they can't pay a common dividend. They don't have to pay your dividend. But if they don't, they accumulate. You have to catch them all up as a company before the preferred common shareholders can ever get a dime. You see why they're actually not, if it's a safe company, an old company that's stable and all that, this is a fixed income security in many ways, and they're kind of out of vogue now, but they're still great. From a company's perspective, we talk from the days of consulting, we talked about this, with debt and equity. With debt, if you raise money as a company and you're using bonds, notes, whatever, with debt, borrowing money in other words, you are under the gun, you have to pay your interest payments, and then you have to pay off the face value of the loans at the end of the time of the debt. And if you don't, they'll take your corporation away from you. The lenders will shut your corporation down. It's over. Everyone loses. So that's the risk with bonds, is that you got to make sure you make your payments, because if you don't, the bond lenders, the bond holders, will shoot your dog, sell your Bible on Craigslist, and make your mom wear furry costumes. So the alternative is, well, stock, because I never have to pay a dividend on stock. Isn't that great? You know, what are the shareholders going to do? They can come to the meetings and just bitch their heads off at you, but that's all they can do. They can't force you. What are they going to do? Drive you into bankruptcy? They're the owners, the stockholders are. Yeah, sure, bring it. And I was unfortunately, though, as a consultant, there were several cases where companies hadn't paid a dividend. There were startups, 3 years, 4 years, no dividend. So the annual shareholders meeting, you'd get these people, mom and pop, I ain't seen no dividend yet. Where the hell is it? You know, and what am I supposed to say, bitch? You know, you have to be nice to them. But at the end of the day, lady, I don't have to pay you a dividend. You can bite me. Eventually, if our company grows enough, we will have some that we don't plow back in. But right now, every dime at our net income line, we're plowing back in to keep our company alive. You should be happy about that, because that's making your stock price go up, and that'll make sure that our company, that'll help ensure that our company survives. But you see that, so it's kind of like it's a mixed bag. Those shareholders theoretically are there forever. They are your owners. So it's the bondholders, they are there until you pay them off. But the shareholders are there forever. You're stuck with them. It's like the difference between an affair that is really, really complicated and a marriage. And you've got your choice of which one you want. Most companies choose a combination of the two. But in that same regard, preferred stock is one thing that you could... As an alternative to common stock, you can bring up, okay, we could do preferred stock instead. Because preferred stock, everyone knows how much we're going to pay. We have to pay it, but we don't have to pay it. But if we don't pay it, we're kind of like building up for some real pain later to catch up. So those are kind of the alternatives that are available traditionally. But let's talk about this. There's a formula for a perpetuity. Let's say that, well, what would be a price? What is the price for this preferred stock, XZN? Remember XZN, this stock right here, XZN, has an 88 cent per share dividend. Well, there is actually a formula The present value of a perpetuity. This is a perpetuity. In other words, the same amount of money comes every period forever. Turns out to be the cash flow, the fixed cash flow, in this case, it's a dividend. For stock, we would do a dividend. Divided by the discount rate you use for the cash flows. So let's say that cash flows for XZN Corporation, we should discount those at 2%. So in this case, XZN, the present value, the price of a share of this preferred stock is going to be 88 cents a share divided by 0.02. That's all there is to it. If I do 0.88 divided by 0.02, I get $44. This stock is worth $44. Now, here's where the fun is. The par value of this stock was $40. Why is the price $44? Any idea? Got any guess? Why is the price $44? Let me try it this way. What was the dividend as a percent of the par value on the stock? What did it say there? 2.2%. That's exactly right. What does the market think the risk level of this stock is?
Zero.
No. Look at the number up there. What is the market discount? 2%. So in other words, the market says this stock is 2% risky, but the company is paying a 2.2% dividend. So the company is paying a bonus. And whenever you get a bonus, that's going to push the price up a little bit. You see how this formula bumps the price up if the company's paying more than it should. In this case, the market is saying you should pay 2%. That's the risk level of the stock. But the company is giving 2.2%. So in this case, this preferred stock is giving a little extra candy. And whenever there's more candy, there's a price appreciation that will happen on this stock. The discount rate is only 2%. The market thinks this stock should be paying is commensurate with a risk level of 2%. The company says, okay, we'll give you 2.2%. So that means that the stock will sell at a premium to par. Again, the stock sells at a premium to par. Now let's move forward in time a little bit, and let's say that after maybe the interest rate environment in the whole economy is going upward, and at some point we calculate the stock price again. And let's say that now cash flows like this company's should be paying 2.5%. Let's see what happens to the price of XZN stock now. It still pays an 88 cent per share dividend. Remember, that's fixed forever. But we now discount at 0.025. What's the price of the stock now? $35.20. In other words, the company's paying 2.2%. The market says you should be paying us 2.5%, so we're going to smack your ass down. And it's just the way it is. I mean, we get punished. And, you know, the company said, well, what are we supposed to do? We can't change the dividend. Well, that's exactly right. Good for you. You are just going to have a lower price. As the interest rate environment rises, stock prices fall. As the interest rate environment falls, stock prices rise for all securities. It is one of the most fundamental rules. As interest rates fall, securities prices rise. As interest rates rise, securities prices fall. So because we are in this low interest rate environment, guess what's happening to stock prices? Up there, going higher and higher. My God, they're ridiculously high. But watch what's going to happen when the Fed finally gets tough and people believe it. No one believes it now. The Fed says, we're going to raise interest rates. Yeah, you keep saying that. This is exactly what was happening in the late 70s. Eventually, the Fed's finally going to get real, serious, and then interest rates, markets will start to believe them. Interest rates will start to go like this. Guess what's going to happen to the stock markets? Guaranteed. Can't tell you when. That's the whole trick. It's the timing. But as those interest rates start to rise in the economy, suddenly all of that boom, boom, boom of stock prices is going to slow down. Yeah. Oh, yeah, the flight to quality. Run to bonds, and when the bonds suck, you run to gold, and when the gold sucks, you run to bullets and to Twinkies, okay, because both of those are important. None of that coconut puff stuff, you know, it's not the taste, it's the consistency. But that's the whole reality of the way the markets work. I got Girl Scout cookies. They had caramel things. They were really tasty, but then, oh, there's coconut. What the hell? That's an abomination hated by God. Ruined a good caramel cookie. Where the hell was I? But keep that in mind that the interest rates are going to go up. They will. And when they do, that's going to take all of the wind out of the securities. Did any of you ever see an old-fashioned Volkswagen Beetle? You know, the old bug? Not these new ones. I had one of the originals back in the day. Oh, it was awesome. But there was one thing about a Volkswagen. It was a manual transmission. You had to go through the clutch and like that. The last gear, which was fourth gear in mine, I had a special one, four gears, it was way close to the reverse. So you'd be kicking that thing up to 50, 60 miles an hour. You'd pop that thing for its fourth gear. And once in a while, you would hit the reverse instead. And what would happen then is ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk. And your face was going like this against the windshield like that. I'm serious. Well, actually, no, my sister-in-law took it, borrowed it for a while, and she did that, and she sent my nephew through the windshield. He's okay. He's just a little odd anymore. But anyway, she didn't even want to tell me what happened. I mean, there's a hole the size of a kid. You know, what the hell? All right, you know, be honest with me. Why is Joshua bleeding? Anyway. But anyway, that's what will happen. When the interest rates go up, you have hit reverse and expect to go ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk. Hey. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.